Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Politically Speaking Podcast. I'm your host, Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. I'm back. It's been a long election season in Mississippi, and now I'm glad that I can return.
No, but you have not conceded.
You have
though.
Not conceded. You know. You're
challenging all those absentees and all those
You
votes
must just
by
be
Democrats.
Praying that this guy loses. Otherwise, people are going to confuse you with this senator for the next 6 years. So.
And yeah. He's going to explain while he's writing all those stories about the death penalty in Missouri.
Yeah, well, yeah, my doppelganger is not going down without a fight. Just trying to get a lot of publicity to get my name out there. So
at least there is one.
By
common,
the way,
one common element. You both are feisty.
Both are feisty.
By the way, I'm Jason Rosenbaum, and that's Joe Manese.
Sorry.
Yes, the other voices that you're hearing are Jason Rosenbaum and Joe Manese. Yes, I am back, and we do have some other races to talk about that aren't me in Mississippi. So let's get right into it. Later on in the show, we're going to talk about the transportation tax and
some national hubbub.
But first, we're going to get into the county executive race. Joe, you've been covering it for us. What's going on?
Well, me and Jason, who's been also
covering some issues.
County,
yeah.
And the bottom line is this: County Executive Charlie Dooley is in this hot primary contest with Councilman Steve Stanger, and this is getting hotter and hotter. They both have negative ads now running on TV. Anyone can go to our website and see them. Actually, if you click on my name, you'll see a list of stories, and you'll find those stories on those ads there, because most of them started running a couple weeks ago, but now they're running them more. But in the backdrop of this, things have gotten really testy between the two over a matter of whether or not they're going to do a debate. There's less than a month left.
The old debate about debates.
Stanger's been wanting him for months. Dooley had held off until Stanger released more of his tax returns, which he did, the state taxes to St. Louis Public Radio, which frankly didn't show much more than his federal taxes. Dooley has now agreed to two debates, one debate. He's offered two dates. They are not the dates that St. Louis Public Radio originally proposed, but they are considering some of ours. We're supposedly going to be the venue that if there's a debate, it will be with us. But things could change, but please stay tuned. Hopefully we will have something good to report as far as the public being able to listen, the two of them, within the next few days. In the meantime, we have the Republican contest between State Rep. Brick Stream and Tony Pasusa, who's a Green Park alderman.
Yes.
And both of them and Stanger were in the Webster Groves Parade on Friday, by the way. So I got firsthand observations about what was going on there. Dooley did have a contingent there. I did not see the county executive there. He may have been there during the early part of the parade. But the Webster Parade is usually one of those go-to places if you're running for office. Even State Senator Eric Schmidt was there making an early appearance for his 2016 run for state treasurer. So it's very hot. A lot of the turnout, though, may very well come down to racial component, which both candidates have agreed, although they have not discussed race themselves that much. Most political scientists and the candidates acknowledge that some of this is going to hinge on how many African-American Democrats turn out, whether or not Republicans cross over, how whites and blacks in the Central Corridor, which tend to swing the Central Corridor part of the county. So there's these demographic elements that the candidates, again, are trying to keep from becoming a major part of the public race. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this is part of as they're working on their ground game.
And Dooley is an African-American. And, Joe, you had a story about this on STL Public Radio in case any of our listeners wanted to head there and read it.
Yeah, explaining sort of this is part of St. Louis, but even in St. Louis County, and Dooley acknowledges it and Stanger acknowledges it, but they both say this is not part of their debate on why Dooley wants to stay in or why Stanger wants to replace him.
Yeah, there's a couple of peculiar things about this primary. First of all, Dooley's ad about how Stanger and Mitt Romney or similar. First of all, I'm not sure if that ad is accurate anymore.
No, it's not. It's not because, in fact, yeah, because we have the state tax returns,
and they've been running for many days after that happened. Also, I should just note that the Dooley campaign made a big deal initially about how Stenger's ads were on KSDK. I watch KSDK often. I've seen many of Dooley's ads on KSDK. So I guess that they've abandoned their anti-KSDK stance or something like that.
I mean, the contention was it had to do with labor.
But Dooley's ads are on there. But also, this whole thing about Stenger's taxes is just strikes me as just completely lacking substance. I mean, it lacks substance when the mayor did it against Lewis Reed. It lacks substance when, it's happening in the Illinois race. I mean, do people in St. Louis County really stay up at night, or St. Louis City stay up at night, and really wondering about whether these candidates paid the right amount of taxes? Aren't there bigger issues to deal with in this contest?
Well, it's part of a narrative. What a candidate does when they're throwing out something like that is they're trying to raise questions about the opponent's character, and particularly if the opponent is lesser known. So like someone like Stenger, who does not have the name recognition that Dooley does, one of the things they want to do is they want to raise questions about the person's character because the person's character isn't the person themselves.
But I think it's also another thing. I mean, let's take those three people who I just mentioned, Pat Quinn, Mayor Francis Slay, and County Executive Dooley. All of those people have been in public office where they get paid, five or six figures for 10 years. We all know what their tax rate is because they don't have other jobs. Basically, this to me is just a way to attack another candidate who has another line of work and to basically either in, Bruce Rauner's case, show how rich he is. And to some extent, that might be what they're trying to do with Stenger.
I think that's what they're trying.
And it just strikes me as that's what's going on here. It doesn't really seem like it's going to, whatever those sort of issues come out of is really going to impact whether that person can do the job or not. Because I know you've been covering St. Louis County government and politics longer than I have, but I've sat through 3 years of these meetings, and the financial wherewithal of the county executive has never come up once. In fact, the only time the finances of any member of the council came up is when the late Kelly Burkett got into a situation where she lost a fee office, and that wasn't even related to county council business. So I'm just not really sure why this is a big issue. I'm sure it's going to continue to be a big issue, and if there's a debate, I'm sure it's going to be a central part of it. But I just wonder if there's more pressing issues for the county residents to deal with at this point.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes.
Because oftentimes when you have a primary like this, you have two candidates who don't really differ too much on the issues. And so it gets into a lot of this silliness.
I think there's some differences between
yes,
the two.
Jason, go into it. Yeah.
In this issue of minority inclusion, I think there's a pretty sizable difference.
Well, I think Stenger would disagree. He says that he's for minority inclusion as well. The question is, which bill? I mean, there was a couple bills before the county council.
Well, the two bills had a pretty significant difference. One of the bills had a higher threshold to require contractors to have apprenticeship programs. Another one had a much lower threshold. And Stenger voted for the one with the lower threshold. And what Dooley and others have contended is having that lower threshold effectively blocks out minority and female contractors who aren't part of labor unions. I mean, that was the contention when it was passed in 2012. And Stenger points out that Dooley supported that particular bill that required most county contracts to have apprenticeship programs over $25,000, which is true, absolutely true. But I think that's a difference. And I think it showcases how, organized labor and some in the black community aren't seeing eye to eye on this. I think that's one tangible difference.
Now, one of the things that Stenger has pointed out, after the bills failed in the council, then Dooley issued this executive order for some of these goals. And Stenger said, well, why didn't Dooley do it before?
I think that is a worthy question to ask. Because Dooley has been in office now for what?
Almost 11 years.
10 or 11 years?
Yeah, it'd be 11 years in October.
And I think just putting it forth, right before an election, when these types of things take a lot of time to actually manifest itself, I think that's a legitimate question. If you followed the situation with the Metropolitan Sewer District where they were trying to have an inclusion built into that policy, that took like 2 or 3 or 4 years to finally formulate. The expectation that this is going to be completed in a matter of 2 or 3 or 4 months before a highly charged election, I think is somewhat unrealistic. But on the other hand, I think it's kind of showcasing, you know, how organized labor and some in the African-American community sometimes, as I said before, don't see eye to eye. That's one issue because that's not the only issue. I think on parks, you know, county executive and Stenger had a much different, you know, philosophy in 2011 in the initial run-up to the budget. But I think there are some similarities between the two. I mean, both of them supported foreclosure mediation. Both of them supported amending the non-discrimination policy to include gays and lesbians. They both supported merging the two economic development agencies, the city and the county. So I think there's tangible differences and tangible similarities.
Both of them just got endorsed within the past week by Planned Parenthood, which is interesting because when Stenger initially ran several years ago, he had pointed out that he was a pro-life Democrat. Now, his camp says, well, that doesn't mean he's not for the basic goals of Planned Parenthood. But that's the kind of thing that might bubble up that some on the Dooley camp are raising questions about.
But you know who else was against abortion rights 7 or 8 years ago? You know, the Democrats' likely gubernatorial candidate, Chris Koster. So
I know.
I'm not really sure. I know people do change on that issue.
Correct. No, sure. I'm not. But
the race that Chris Koster is running, I mean, it's different to be pro-life throughout the entire state of Missouri rather than being pro-life in the St. Louis County.
Yeah, I don't know really how the county executive's office would really be involved in abortion policy.
And that's fair.
Unless they might be they might be involved, though, in contraceptive policy from a standpoint because of the health clinics.
That would be one thing. Maybe another thing is zoning an abortion clinic in unincorporated St. Louis County, which I think the chances of happening with, you know, Missouri's legislature are almost zero. So I would say it's something to differentiate the candidates possibly or not. But, I mean, again, going back to the tax thing, I'm not really sure it has a tangible impact on government.
But I think Chris's point, though, is good. One of the reasons that we're dealing with some of these peripheral issues is before many of the gut check issues that voters really care about, Chris is right. They're generally on the same page.
So we've talked a lot about the Democratic primary. Joe, give us a little bit of a snapshot for the Republican primary.
Okay, right now, and Jason did an overview, so I want to defer to part of this to Jason on this, other than to say that Stream and Pazusa is somewhat of a similar situation where they're on the same side on many issues. But
I think
they're
much more in line on issues. And honestly, I called it a low-velocity primary because – I mean, yeah, Pesosa's kind of throwing some small jabs at Stream about some of his votes, but it's just not reaching the same level of rancor that Stenger and Dooley are in, because I'm not sure either one are going to run TV ads during the primary. You know, Rick Stream is the House budget chairman. I think that he probably has racked up a lot of prominent endorsements within St. Louis County, whether it be the aforementioned Eric Schmidt or Jane Cunningham, a former state senator, now Monarch Fire Board member.
And arguably some business groups may end up with Stream. Stream's from Kirkwood, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The reason why I don't think you can completely count out Pesosa, although I would probably say he's the underdog from a fundraising standpoint, is he's received some endorsements from some prominent St. Louis County conservatives like former Senator Jim Lemke, John Bruner, State Representative Paul Kirtman, who's technically a Franklin County conservative, but he has some presence here. So I think each side has their various levels of support, but it's just not reaching the same level as the Democratic primary, which is why it's not getting as much attention.
But Pazusa and the Webster Parade had a vehicle that was plastered with slogans against the any possible city-county merger, and he was personally handing out literature that includes some of that. So I think he's trying to zero in on some of these issues that he thinks could help him, particularly Well, there's people of all sides who are raising questions about what sort of merger or whatever.
Yes.
But this is particularly a hot topic among conservatives, and the county Republican Party has come out against it.
It should be noted that neither Dooley nor Stanger are explicitly endorsing a specific merger proposal. Part of it's by design. There's not really a specific proposal up to opine on. I think both of them are waiting for the Better Together studies to get done before doing anything. But probably also is more structural. I mean, I don't know if it's really worth it for the Democratic candidate to go out on a limb on this issue when they're not going to really directly control its destiny. The voters are.
Yeah,
so.
City and county voters. Sure. And Better Together is the group that is promoting it, but they're doing a lot of studies to kind of explain what or what's not going on.
But yeah, I mean, the county executive's race is probably taking up the most oxygen in the region. And, you know, I'm sure that it's going to get zanier and zanier as the
weeks
go.
Well, it's sort of blocking out the political sun, I would say, for sure.
Yes. Well, let's get on to our second topic here.
Which is the other issue. Other big issue.
On the August ballot. Jason, you are covering this issue for us. Mm-hmm. Before we get into some of the business interests of it, give us a brief rundown of what this initiative would do.
This initiative would raise the sales tax by what I like to call 0.75% or 0.75 cents, or however you want to call it. It would take in about $540 million a year for 10 years. Most of that money is going to go into a pot that will be divided by the state Highways and Transportation Commission, and it will go towards transportation projects, which is why it's called the transportation tax colloquially. Now, you know, we were just talking about how the county executives contest can get a little silly and a lot of the issues may not be as substantive. I think there are a lot of substantive issues and a lot of substantive arguments for and against on this issue. The proponents are saying that without this influx of money, the state's infrastructure is not going to be able to be maintained with the levels of money that are coming in now, either because the gas tax is not keeping up with the amount of repairs that need to be done, or because the federal situation is a lot less, there's a lot of turmoil with the federal funding right now. Right.
Well, and we have one of the lowest, if not the lowest, gas tax in the country.
Yes. So that's from the proponent side. And the other side of it is, for the first time, it would signal a shift in transportation policy, because this money could be used for mass transit, trails, non-highways and roads types of things. Now, I will say that it's probably attracted some diverse support. I mean, business groups support it. Organized labor supports it. Some prominent Democrats like Claire McCaskill are supporters, and prominent Republicans like Mike Kehoe and Tom Dempsey are supporters. But it has attracted also an equally diverse opposition.
And prominent.
Obviously, the governor, Jay Nixon, came out against it. I think making for the first time in recent memory a situation where McCaskill and Nixon differ on a significant issue. And he's joined by some left-of-center folks like Jill Shoup, a Democrat from Creve Coeur, Jeanette Mott Oxford, a former state rep who now leads the Missouri Association for Social Welfare, along with some very conservative Republicans like frequent podcast guest John Lamping of Ladue, Senator Ed Emery of Lamar, and just a whole lot of other people. I think that the opposition has said is on a lot of different things. They don't like the fact that a sales tax is being used. They feel like it's going to be regressive toward the poor and elderly. Some conservatives just don't like the bigness of it. And I think there's some others who see the initial project list as being very heavily oriented towards roads and highways, and they would rather it be more balanced in their view toward those other forms of transportation. Now, I will just say, I took a ride with a MoDOT engineer, and he pointed out a lot of the areas of 270 that was in desperate need of repair, including actually putting me under a bridge where some of the, you know, bridge was literally crumbling. So I do think that some people who are saying the infrastructure needs repair, not just here but around the state, I think it's based in reality. I'm just not sure that this particular tax, given how large it is and given the opposition that's coming up, is going to get an easy ride.
We should also point out that backers of this have contributed more than $2 million in large donations just this year alone. Jason, is there any indication that people against the transportation sales tax are going to be funneling in some money against it?
And first of all, it should be noted that most of those big donations are from contractors who
would
likely
benefit.
Get the work
right.
from that. Right. Which I think is – I think there was another proposal that came in the 90s, and that was kind of a similar
yes.
situation.
Yes, I covered that.
I don't remember the exact proposal. You know, I talked with one of the treasurer of the group that is leading the charge against it, and he does not expect – someone like Rex Ziegfeld to drop $1 million in opposition to it, would they really want that. I think they're kind of just going by volunteers at this point. And it's kind of a risky strategy. I've always said that when you're looking at ballot initiatives, if it has organized opposition, it's far more likely to fail than if it doesn't have organized opposition. But this might be a situation where people read the pros and the cons, and maybe they will be – it'll be a situation where the argumentations for it are convincing enough and they'll vote for it. But they might read it and like, wow, I'm going to have 11% sales tax in parts of St. Louis City and there's no way I'm going to vote for this. It might just be organically defeated that way.
Well, one of the things I think needs to be pointed out is that it's not going to be on the ballot in a vacuum. We've got several other initiatives that arguably are going to draw conservative, rural conservatives to the polls, and many of those people may not be for the transportation tax either. And that's the so-called right to farm ballot proposal, which Marshall Griffin, our Jefferson County correspondent, has an article on the site right now. Jason and I have both each written extensively about this over the years. Basically, some see this proposal, some see it as a way to bolster the rights of farmers. Others say no, it bolsters the rights of factory farms. But that said, that's liable to attract a lot of potential rural voters to the polls. And then you have a gun rights proposal that's on the ballot. Now, there are some legal questions about it. There are some people who are trying to do a last-minute effort to get it knocked off the ballot in the courts. But in any event, that's likely to attract a number of voters as well, rural voters as well. And they're not the kind of people who would necessarily support the transportation tax. That's
no.
my point.
I think that's very – it's very good to point that out.
And this is an August election here and not a November one.
I
that
think
does change the dynamic.
And August is always low turnout and it's always heavier on the conservative
and
side.
And I think one thing that's really – I think an undercurrent that may hurt it, the chances of the tax is what's going on in St. Louis City. Because obviously St. Louis County's turnout, it might be larger than usual because of this county executive's
yes.
race. But you would have to assume that the people that would maybe vote for a tax increase would probably come from urban areas like St. Louis and Kansas City more so than rural areas, though. You could make an argument that this could benefit rural areas, so that might turn them out. But there is literally, besides license collector and one state rep race, there is literally no other races of consequence in the city of St. Louis that's going to bring out turnout. Maybe the recorders of deeds race between Sharon Carpenter and Ed McFarlane will fit the bill, but I'm skeptical. And I think if there are not enough races there to make sure there's a big city turnout, there may not be enough voters to put that over the top. So we'll have to see.
So quickly, before we go on to our final topic here, the business interest that we talked about, I just ran the numbers pretty quickly. The top contributor this year in large donations for the transportation sales tax is Industry Advancement Fund, Heavy Constructors, $430,000, and then International Union of Operating Engineers, $300,000. So pretty obviously both people who stand to gain should this become.
And transportation tax is an interesting one in that you've got some business group and labor groups who are backing it, but
right.
for different reasons. But it's unclear for all these things we've mentioned that they're going to have enough clout to overcome.
Yeah.
Especially at the time when the General Assembly just cut income tax.
Yeah. But I think that, as I've said before on the show, I think a lot is at stake here. I think that, you know, there could be some transportation funding issues down the road if something's not done. And I think that even if this doesn't end up passing, I'm getting a sense that the issue of passing some sort of revenue increase, whether it be gas tax or tolling or something else, is probably going to be in discussion, because I don't think that this is a phantom, you know, situation where the revenue is going down, although some people may disagree.
Well, and Koster's already said publicly to me, and I'm sure to others, that the transportation problems in the state is going to be one of his top issues as he runs for governor in 2016.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about another 2016 issue, Joe. You read an article. Give us the summary.
I want to throw this out. This is in the entertainment category, okay? Okay, the National Journal, which is a nonpartisan, respected publication, put out a thing a couple days ago. And what it was about, the headline says, Five Democrats Who Should Run Against Hillary Clinton. And the point is, it says that she could be vulnerable, but only if qualified candidates decide to challenge her. And they picked five Democrats that they say could run a strong campaign instead of her. Of course, the caveat is, I think virtually every one of these five has already endorsed her. But still, what's interesting about these five is that two are from Missouri, the purple state, red state, depending on who you talk to. And that's Senator Claire McCaskill and Governor Jay Nixon. And in fact, McCaskill, it talks about her being, you know, a female media savvy red state prosecutor who defied the odds to win a second term. Oops. And then for Nixon, it says that he is, quote, one of the most accomplished Democratic governors in the country, and dubs him the Teddy Roosevelt of Missouri, which is, I'm sure he's loving this. and now the rest of the five, just so our listeners know, is Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, former Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, who's a progressive favorite, and
Senator Tim Kaine.
Yeah, Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia is also a former governor. So it's just throwing that out there for a little discussion here to close it out.
Yeah, if Hillary Clinton runs, I don't think our Missouri dreams are going to come true. But
there are other places for them. Some people have floated Senator McCaskill as an AG possibility. Some people have floated Nixon as a possibility for a cabinet position or something
or a U.S. Senate candidate. In fact, over the same holiday weekend, Dave Weigel of Slate.com mentioned that Missouri might be in play if the Democrats can coax Nixon into running against Roy Blunt in 2016. I believe he's already been on record saying,
He's not going to do it. That would be a very expensive, high-velocity race. And Nixon has been there, done that, when he ran against Kit Bond in 98. I don't think he's up for it now. But I still say that he's got to be on the Democratic shortlist for VP, like it or not, regardless of what you think of him, because my contention for years has been both parties need the Midwest, and whoever can get a strong Midwesterner on their ticket believes that they could have an edge in getting a strong Midwest turnout. That's one of the reasons Romney went with Paul Ryan, who was from Wisconsin. So I really think that when you look at the Democratic field in the Midwest, it's pretty thin, especially if anybody of a younger than 70. Mm-hmm. And Nixon's under 60. So he's got to be on the short list of potential.
So you're saying Illinois Governor Pat Quinn doesn't cut the mustard?
Yes, I'm saying he doesn't.
Who has by the way, has approval ratings sometimes below 30%. So.
And I'm not saying he's not a good governor. I'm just saying you got to look at the demographics.
Saying the mustard is
and
not
nor,
cut.
Nor, yes. nor am I saying he's a bad governor either, but his approval ratings are some of the lowest in the country.
Yeah. So.
All right. And on that note, let's close this out here. You can read all of our stories at stlpublicradio.org. You can read a lot of stories that we have about a lot of the things that we've been talking about here today. You can follow me on Twitter at CS McDaniel. You can follow Joe on Twitter
at J Manis. That's JMANNIES.
And you can follow Jason on Twitter,
J Rosenbaum.
You can also subscribe to us on iTunes. If you just go onto iTunes and do a search for Politically Speaking, we'll be back next week. Until then, so long.
So long.
So long.